President Obama ends this year with a dramatic sense of historic destiny and personal mission. The president looks ahead to a second term, and the vision of what he wants to achieve seems clearer than during the erratic and divided first term. It possibly echoes the moment in 1964 when newly elected LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, realized that he finally had the chance to enact the agenda of civil rights and great society programs he had spent his career in public life advocating. Robert Caro's latest volume in his life's work, The Years of Lyndon Johnson, leaves us right at the moment of Johnson's triumphant election in 1964, after taking office when President Kennedy was assassinated in November of 1963. Caro suggests some surprising parallels between 2012 and 1964. He says Johnson's arrival in the White House was a consequence of historic destiny driven by a deeply personal mission.
Well, it's quite remarkable. One minute he's in a car behind the president going through Dallas while everyone cheers Jack and Jackie and no one pays any attention to him. Then the next moment, it seems like, he's in a hospital room in Parkland Hospital standing in against the wall where the Secret Service has put him for protection in a cubicle there, waiting for news on President Kennedy's condition. And then, of course, the news comes and he's flying back to Washington. And he has, you know, they say today that there's 11 weeks between Election Day and Inauguration Day. And the political scientists say that's not enough time to prepare to be president. Lyndon Johnson had basically 2 hours and 6 minutes. That's the length of the plane flight. He takes the oath of office on the plane. The plane takes off. 2 hours and 6 minutes later, it lands in Washington. He has to step off that plane and be ready to be president.
And he mobilizes resources that he's always known about politically because he's a master in Washington, but he's also mobilized a personal sense of it's now or never to really achieve what he achieved in those months after the assassination.
Well, you know, all his life he's wanted to do something for civil rights ever since he was a 21-year-old school teacher in a Mexican-American school down near the little town called Cotulla, Texas, in South Texas. 3 days after the assassination of President Kennedy, he's preparing to give his first speech to the joint session of Congress. And around his kitchen table, four or five advisors are gathered trying to decide what's going to be in this speech. And they're all saying, don't put civil rights in. It's a lost cause. Don't use up your political capital on this. And Johnson comes into the room. He listens to the conversation for a couple of minutes. And when they say, don't fight for a noble cause, it's a lost cause, he says, well, what the hell's the presidency for then? Mm. And he picks up civil rights.
How does he take the steps to both tiptoe around the Kennedy legacy, but also to create his own Johnson legacy?
Well, that's a very good way of putting it. He knows he has to do both those things. His first speech contains the very memorable line, let us continue. So he takes Kennedy's civil rights bill, other important legislation, a very important tax cut bill. And the first thing he does is get those two bills moving through Congress. But then he says to his friends, now I have to do something to make the presidency my own. And he does something he's also always wanted to do, and he announces the war on poverty. He grew up in poverty. He's always wanted to fight it. And he announces that that's what he's going to do.
And what do you credit his success in implementing those programs? Really, this was you describe in this book that the last tide of liberalism ran out in 1937 at the end of the FDR era. In many ways, historians describe 1964 and 1965 as the high tide of American liberalism in the last half of the 20th century.
Yes, you know, because it wasn't the end of the Roosevelt era, but when he tries to get the Supreme Court packing bill through Congress, Republican conservatives and the Southern Democrats unite against it and realize they have the power in Congress. And for 26 years after that, from 1937 to 1963, no Democratic-sponsored major piece of social welfare legislation passes Congress, not under Roosevelt the rest of his term, not under Truman. And Kennedy's bills are also largely stalled. Johnson comes in with this genius for dealing with Congress. It's a genius. I mean, no American president in the second half of the 20th century could deal with Congress like Lyndon Johnson. He is, what I call him in the third volume, master of the Senate, master of Capitol Hill. And to watch him get these bills moving and get the war on poverty and the Great Society started, if you like political power, if you're interested in political power, this is fascinating.
When Johnson stands in December of 1964 and looks back on that year, really looking back to his moment of taking office more than a year earlier in 1963, what does he see? Total triumph, absolute power. He can do no wrong at this point.
That's what objectively he could see. But of course, within Lyndon Johnson, he always has these insecurities, terrible insecurities inside him, which you can understand when you learn about his boyhood, so that he's never secure about things.
So given, you know, in a very different way, you know, Barack Obama has insecurities about his rise to power in the United States, and yet he's suddenly had an election that in a very different way vindicates his own sense of maybe he wasn't going to make it. What's the cautionary tale for Barack Obama, thinking about what elections do deliver and don't deliver to presidents with these kinds of insecurities?
Well, I don't know what sort of cautionary tale they should deliver to Obama. I happen to think he's already has a great accomplishment. The health care bill may be a flawed bill, but when Lyndon Johnson passes the first civil rights bill, it's when he's Senate Majority Leader, it's in 1957, it's a badly flawed bill, and he knows it. But he says, you know, the important thing was to pass it. Once you pass it, it's always easier to go back and fix it. Now, Obama passed a health care bill, which, among other things, gives insurance, peace of mind in some respect, to 33 million people who didn't have insurance before. Martin Luther King said, the moral arc of the universe bends slowly, but it bends towards justice. I think that health care bill is a bend towards justice. So I'm not sure that Obama doesn't already have a great achievement. But, you know, you do see when things go bad, how one misstep, Vietnam in Johnson's case, comes to swallow up all his dreams for the great society. You know, Johnson, it's civil rights. He passes Medicare. He passes 70 different education bills, 70. But they're all swallowed up in the war. So you really feel that a president is always sort of on the edge of a precipice.
Robert Caro, author of most recently The Passage of Power, The Years of Lyndon Johnson. Tomorrow, our conversation with Robert Caro continues.